Hello and welcome to the Culture File Weekly. Hello and welcome to the Culture File Weekly with me, Luke Clancy, and some journeys into sound, which take us from an Irish bog to an Italian mountaintop, figuratively like. Trombone virtuoso Filippo Vignato is here to talk about his dream project of architectural improvisations. R.D. Bog gains some friends in a turf performance space, and pop activist Lee Ning explains slow touring. But we begin within a jungle of noise-making objects. Of the many collaborations that deaf percussionist Evelyn Glennie has taken part in, from working with the Academy of St. Martin's in the Fields all the way to the Zurich Chamber Orchestra, from Björk to Danny Boyle, perhaps the most open, most intriguing yet has been to team up with the British-Jamaican deaf poet Raymond Antrobus. Glennie was introduced to Antrobus by the super producer Ian Brennan. Brennan's plan was simple, but as things turned out, complicated. To capture on tape everything that happened when Antrobus met with the percussionist one afternoon amid Glennie's nearly 4,000 percussion instrument strong collection. The result was a highly volatile mixture of words and vibrations, as Evelyn Glennie explained to Culturefile.
The first word my son signed was music. Both hands, fingers conducting music for everything, even hunger. Open mouth for the chew, chew, spoon, squealing, music.
I'm really keen to explore collaborations that are slightly unknown, where there's this sort of question mark, really.
I love how he clings to my shoulders and turns his head to point at the soft body of a caterpillar sliding across the counter and signs, music.
The idea came from Ian Brennan, the music producer and author, and he just happened to mention if, you know, I knew about Raymond Antrobus and his work, and he had this vision, or Ian had the vision, of bringing Raymond and myself together. And so I asked if Ian and Raymond would like to visit where I'm based here in Cambridgeshire, the Evelyn Glennie collection.
To the William Blake Professor of English Literature, who approached me after my reading to tell me my work relies on my deafness. My work relies on Albion air, on instruments pumping the chest, relies on watching a birch tree sprout from city soil, relies on the face, the gestures I carry to the mirrors of mythologies.
Raymond is a wonderful British poet. He has a hearing impairment. He was born with a hearing impairment. And so he talks very openly about his hearing loss and more recently about becoming a father, a new father. And how that, you know, has impacted his life.
The music that can't leave the living alone relies on Blake's vibrating visions of sweeter noise, an unmanacled mortal mind, a collective breath, a green echoing of innocence and experience, on stepping through the swinging doors of darkness, clasping your own orb of light.
When we met for the first time, which was on a pretty chilly January day, a very clear day, and he came wrapped up and Ian just sort of very quietly started setting up all his microphones upstairs, and I just sort of put on the floor a waterphone and just a few other very small instruments, and Raymond started reciting. So I had no idea what he was going to recite.
The mechanism of speech. Meaning muscle to power difficult, his instrument incorrect, his low, too high, too tongue.
When we came downstairs here, and right behind me is a very, very large drum, a large timpani, and we put things on top of the timpani, and we experimented whereby Raymond actually recited into the skin of the timpani, and then it really resonates, his voice resonates and so on. So we experimented with that. We even experimented with him reciting right next to the skin of a lambag, an Irish lambag. And again, it's quite resonant. And then, you know, we asked him to stand away from the drums to get the difference in feel and so on, and did that have an impact on how he recited poetry? And then he could sort of sway in between, you know, come close and then go far away from the drum and so on. Positioning of us needed to be pretty crucial.
The birds sound different in this city. I'm new to their rhythms, can't place them easily. Jarring, precise, I have to listen.
And I think what was interesting when we started recording was that
I've never been one for birds.
First of all, it was the first time I'd worked with a poet. Secondly, when someone finishes reading, then they usually just stop. But of course, with sound, it carries on. And so a lot of the resonant sounds still had a life, you know, that was carrying on after the words had stopped. In a way, the space was still suspended with sound, even after he had finished reciting. And that became really quite poignant in some of the poetry, you know, where it was that suspense and that kind of waiting almost that was as equal to the sound.
The cat outside my rented house saw me arrive, unpack, and settle into my new life. He watched from windows and lawns and trees and doorsteps. He saw me at all the angles of a neighborhood over the weeks. One day, even though I'd never fed him, he strolled across the lawn and ran his body across my shins.
I think that the way Ian works in particular is that he's a great person to bring people together, but he's also one of those people that does not like to think about those aspects too much. He wants to let things just happen as they are in the most pure, pure sense. And I love that. I like that myself. And that's exactly what happened in this case, which then allows the platform to think about, okay, well, if we plan this or plan that. So for example, from that recording, we then were asked to attend the Edinburgh International Book Festival to perform together. It was still improvised, but there was just a little bit more thought as regards to the instrumentation, and we knew how long we would have to perform for and so on, and we knew we had to deliver something. So I think that it's given us the feeling and the trust within each other to think that actually we could present something that is much more planned, and that's quite exciting.
Oh, Butters, I have left Oklahoma and I'm thinking of you, strolling across the glass towards my door. I want to leave this poem out for you like a saucer of milk.
The words of Raymond Antrobus and the music of Evelyn Glennie, and the album created from that session is called Another Noise, and it's available now on Bandcamp. How to make friends with the bog next. On our D-Bog in County Lough, the coalition of turf cutters, horticulturists, artists, archaeologists, farmers and local historians are doing their bit to make sure the unique ecosystem of their local bog gets the attention and respect it deserves. The group call themselves the Friends of RD Bog, and this weekend they're hosting the Bog Cafe, a micro-festival on RD Bog, where Culturefile's Niamh Daly met some of the bog's friends.
So today we are out on RD Bog.
So we're out here in the elements with the farmers, I suppose, chopping and streaming.
We're out here on a part of the bog called Stormanstown, and it's where our group Friends of RD Bog are building our turf house.
My name is Helen Flanagan. I am a multidisciplinary artist from RD in County Louth. I work in a socially engaged way, and I'm interested in folk culture, history, and the natural world. I produce events and social spaces, and I am an organiser with Friends of RD Bog. RD Bog is Ireland's most easterly raised bog. It's the furthest east of all the Midland raised bogs, a couple of kilometres outside the town of RD in County Louth. What is a raised bog? A raised bog is, we see them all over the Midlands of Ireland. 10,000 years ago, they would have been lakes that were left after the Ice Age. And over the past 10,000 years, they would have filled in with a special type of moss called sphagnum moss.
And over thousands of years, this moss would have filled in the lake and grown and eventually developed a beautiful raised, almost hill of moss and all the unique plants that you find on bogs in Ireland. So my background is writing and film. That's what I studied and that's what I worked as. I worked as a filmmaker for years and a screenwriter. And I just felt it was quite a lonely existence. It was, even when you were making a film and you're working with lots of people, I found it to be a very isolating process. It wasn't very collaborative. It wasn't very community focused. And after college, I started working with Fighting Words. I started volunteering with them, and that was kind of my first introduction to working with both young people and, I suppose, working on a project that was all about providing an opportunity to engage with the arts with people who might not normally get to engage with the arts. And so I suppose the work that I do now very slowly kind of progressed from that point. In 2020, I got involved with Friends of RD Bog as an organiser. I saw that the group had come together. It was in its infancy. They started an Instagram page. And my brother said, "Oh, hey, did you see that RD Bog has an Instagram page now?" And I was like, "I want to be part of that." I was so delighted to see that there were other people out there that really cared about RD Bog. It was a place that was really important to me as a child. Like, I spent, like, you know, there would be summers where I walked the entire bog road every day. There's not much to be at in the country, you know. So I spent an awful lot of time poking around RD Bog, walking around it as a child. We've been doing lots of different kinds of work. So there's ecological restoration, advocacy work, mapping of things like biodiversity and capturing that kind of information. But we also do a lot of creative projects. We've made a film. We put on a small arts and eco festival called the Bog Cafe, social events. We have the RD Bog Mummers. We've been making folk plays. But this project is called the Turf House. And the Turf House is a community cultural project that is supported by Creative Ireland and Louth County Council, and it involves us, Friends of RD Bog, researching turf houses, which would have been a type of vernacular dwelling that you would find on not just RD Bog, but bogs all over the country. It would have been a sod house that, you know, people would have made their house out of turf. So it was a space to celebrate and to share all of the different skills of the people in the group. So it's a very multidisciplinary group. We have archaeologists, we have people interested in biodiversity, so we have ecologists, hydrologists, retired people, farmers, artists. So the Turf House project was a way of creating a space for everyone to share those skills. And it's a space to bring people together for cups of tea, to have lunch. So we have some shelter. You know, we're on a bog. It's hard to bring people out here. It's often raining. So it's a shelter. It's also going to be a performance space. There's a lot of performers and there's a lot of very creative people in the group. So to have a space to bring everyone together in this kind of way is really special. It's the heart of our work. As part of the Turf House project, we have been recording oral history with a gentleman who actually remembers the last turf house on RD Bog. So the part of the bog we're in today is an emerging oak forest. But this is new. This forest is only about 20, 30 years old. So before it would have been this kind of flat open bog area. And over here, that's where the last turf house on RD Bog would have stood. So I guess building the turf house here is also a way of honouring that and a nod to that memory, I guess. I suppose what our hope is and what we're trying to do out here is we're trying to preserve what we can. I think that's very important. Bogs are precious ecosystems, and when they're gone, they're gone. We're trying to preserve what we can, our own little bit, and really we're trying to share the beauty and the magic of the place with anyone that wants to hear and experience it and take part. I guess that's really at the heart of what we're at.
Helen Flanagan on RD Bog there with reporter Niamh Daly, and the Bog Cafe is happening right now. And from the bog to the mountain next. Filippo Vignato is an Italian trombonist and improviser who, for the last few years, has been touring a project he calls All About Dreaming. Beginning in a small church in Italy, he developed a long-form improvisation that explores the spaces he enters, probing their reverberations and resonances, their peaks and troughs, and leading audiences along with him. He'll be performing the acoustic hike on The Cooler in Dublin next month, before which he spoke to Culturephile about the trombone's deep roots and the tactile qualities of sound. Right.
Vado.
The sound is a mysterious thing somehow. I mean, they are waves. They are waves that hit the body, basically. And so we are definitely hit, like physically. The acoustic sound is very powerful. By acoustic, I mean, even mostly when I'm doing the concerts, there are not mics or amplification. So this wave hits the space and so the people directly. The sound of the trombone is produced by the lips of the musician. This project, even before it has this name, it was cooking, you know, inside me since many years actually, and there was a turning point because I have been asked, I think in 2018 or 2019, to do a concert inside the church, which was actually, it was funny because it was the Chiesa di San Filippo Neri, which is like, it's my name, it's the saint which holds my name, in Fermo, which is a little town, a medieval town in Marche, which is in the center of Italy. And it was a revelation. Of course, every musician knows that the refraction of whatever room you're in, like it could be really from a shower room or a bathroom or a bigger room, or it affects the sound. Actually, the sound is produced also because of the refractions. And so this church had this beautiful reverb. And so that was the beginning point. And then it was a practice that I've developed. These buildings, they have built with the idea, especially the churches, and with the idea of playing music inside them. I don't know if it's, I'm not judging if it's about the religion. I'm not interested in that thing, but this sacrality of the sound is shown at its best. What we do is to search in our subconscious. Maybe to say it better, you have to be very conscious that you're going to search. I don't want to show people what I can do. I just want to search for something which I didn't know before. There's a famous mountain climber, Nives Meroy. She's Italian. And she's one of the most important female climber. And she wrote this book. And the title of the book is "Io sono le montagne che non ho scalato," which would be "I am the mountains I haven't climbed yet." I love this idea. Thank you.
Filippo Vignato there, and he'll be bringing All About Dreaming to the Cooler in Dublin on October 10th. Tickets from improvisedmusic.ie. If you can imagine anything happening after Culture Night, the latest edition of the Irish Museum of Modern Art's Earth Rising Festival is on in Kilmainham, with artists, performers, researchers and concerned parties who will, in the museum's words, celebrate art and culture as catalysts for environmental change. One of those who'll be making the journey to the weekend celebration is the London-based German singer and artist Li Ning. Given the occasion, they obviously will avoid flying short haul. In fact, Earth Rising is just one date on Li Ning's slow tour, an experimental approach to gigging involving minimising the luggage, sticking to trains and ferries, staying a little bit longer in each city and collaborating with local artists to make the show. Obviously, they're not going to avert the climate emergency all by themselves, as Li Ning explained to Culturefile, but the experiment might just provide ideas on stemming the impact of the pop mega tour.
Cracks in the surface, but they cannot hide this. So why are you nervous? Take a leap into the dark. You don't have to play a pipe. We all are certain.
We are little donkeys right now. We have a ton of luggage on us because we do have to travel with a lot of gear, and we're taking the trains and the ferries, so it's a lot of carrying, but it's also exciting because you have to like really find out what it is that you need.
Promise that I won't let go of you, and I get you back up on your feet when you fall.
I found a step also to reduce some aspects of just carrying luggage by working with local designers in each city. I've reached out to a local designer to ask them if they wanted to dress us for the show. And so we're going to be dressed in somebody's work that is also obviously local to each city, which is incredible and beautiful.
Do you know who that is in Dublin?
Mia Welch. I absolutely fell in love with them because they have this like strength. It's almost like armor, but such a contrasting lightness to it, and a very like feminine touch that is going opposite the very structured tailoring aspects. She uses a lot of knitting and a beautiful color palette. I'm very excited to experience it.
And I get you back up on your feet when you fall.
The idea is to be very conscious about how we move and how we travel. We take the trains and ferries everywhere and spend more time in each city, which usually on my tour, I would be in and out of a city, not seeing anything of where I am. And this way we have gatherings, we have panel talks, we have community activation in each city to be able to connect and really maybe even foster long-lasting relationships with people that I otherwise wouldn't be able to even meet. I think this like aspect of also like a sustainability of time is very interesting to me. I think I'm really using this time to not just think about, you know, how you can have like biodegradable cups and other things. It's more about also how to treat your own time and other people's time, and how to maybe add on to something that's already existing. You know, like each city has a community already. Why would I come as an artist and all of a sudden just make everyone come to my thing? And that's also not sustainable, you know, kind of implementing something onto a city that I'm not even familiar with.
They don't know how beautiful you are. They don't have no words.
I also think it's a very important point for marginalized people that we've been put into the margins for so long, and it's all always considered underground, it's all always considered urban. And that also means there is no financial stability. The market is not built around any sort of financial foreshadowing for the future. It is dire, and it's hard as a musician to survive. And I think people get to a point at some point when, of course, they are underground and influential, but then the big artists draw from your work, and they draw and take from your inspiration and make it pop and very edible to a broader audience and make a lot of money, you know? And at some point you just get tired and fed up. Nowadays, especially, it is even harder to really make a living out of it and to tour, for example. And with that slow tour, for example, I've had the opportunity so far to really collaborate with artists in different cities that I would have never been able to really meet, because also it's so expensive to come to a city like Paris and stay for a couple of days and collaborate with people that obviously also want to get paid if you do a show together. So it is a very beautiful opportunity right now. They don't know how beautiful you are. There is no one way to do anything, and it's not just anybody's responsibility to change. It is all of our responsibility to try and find solutions for how we treat our environment and how we become more conscious of the way we deal with the climate crisis. So all we can do is go the steps that we find and perfect them and learn from our experiences. Now somebody else can elaborate on it, and it can be something more interesting, and even more conscious can be created for another artist. Even if there was an answer, people would already do it. So it's a trial and error. You have to push and go and figure out and jump into the deep end, leap into the dark, you know, like it's anybody's guess, and I'm just trying things out. Utopia. Don't take it all away from me.
Leaning There and the Earth Rising Festival continues over the weekend, but the Culture File Weekly stops right here for another week. We'll be back next Saturday, 6:30 p.m. Till then, bye now.